Open the item and then you introduce them, all right?
So we have item number 8 today, which is a state of salmonids 2, fish and hot water, status, threats, and solutions for California salmon, steelhead, and trout with Mr. Dr. Peter Moyle and Dr. Robert Lusardi of UC Davis.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for inviting us. This is, say, for us an important topic, and I think hope you will like it as well. Let's just get rolling here if I can figure out how to make this work, which is, I'm already failing.
You're doing fine. So this is a laser pointer, this top one, and then left and right.
Okay, so I want to go forward. Well, this is our report. One thing, we have copies for you of the fish and hot water report, if you haven't already seen it, which is an in-color reduced summary of the work we've done. The work is based on a 500-plus page report that we produced in 2017 on the state of the salmonids. Basically, we wanted to base our analysis of how the salmonids are doing in the state, and salmonids means salmon and trout, basically. We wanted to figure out how well they were doing, but doing this by summarizing the best available literature and talking to lots and lots of people about experts in these fish to figure out what's going on. So that if you see this fish in hot water, it's the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg is this major report here. Which it makes fascinating reading in itself, of course. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to talk a little about the methods and major findings of our report. Pat will talk about examples that are relevant to the North Coast and this region, and then Rob will talk about what we can do to protect these fish or make them return to better conditions. Well, anyway, our state of salmonids report updates a previous report written in 2008, and I'll say a little bit more about that next. It's over 500 pages. It's peer-reviewed. That's important to us. We made sure that every one of these individual reports was reviewed by multiple people, preferably the people who really are in the field working on these fish. We had status scores. Every fish was scored by 7 different metrics. I won't get into that too much, but we had a systematic way of doing that. And indeed, one of the one of the reasons we produced this 2017 report is that our experience with the previous report gave us a reason to really improve on our basic metrics. Finally, we also have a confidence rating. We rate ourselves at how confident are we of the judgments that we come up with. When we come up with a score for a species of whether it's endangered or not, how confident are we of that? For some species, there's just as much literature out there. For other species, there's tons of it. And we wanted to make sure that we weren't trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes by saying we were confident about something that we were not. The 2008 report was our starter report. It was also quite lengthy. It provided the summary of the older literature. And then 10 years later, we decided to produce this the Fish and Hot Water report is the more recent report. And basically, as I mentioned, it's greatly updated, expanded all the most recent data we could find, including unpublished data from the agencies, and with improved metrics for evaluating the fish. A key for everything we do is to make sure our methods are repeatable. And one of the reasons we did this so quickly after, only 10 years does not seem like a long period of time, we had the drought in here. This drought was a major impact on salmonids, as you can see from this photograph here. The snow on the Sierras was, in 2012, a fairly wet year. It was a typical snowpack, and during the drought, the snowpack diminished. That's just representative of a reduction in stream flows and water available to salmonids throughout the state. So our focus of the report was, what is the status of the salmonids, what factors cause their declines, and how can they be conserved? And we were very focused on trying to get all these things, emphasize these things. These are the metrics that we use. I won't talk about them specifically, except I will mention a little bit more about climate change. The whole idea, though, is that these are metrics that we can score and which are repeatable. So in theory, any one of you could go to the big report, look at the information we present, or go out and collect your own information, use our scoring system, and come up with a score that would be either could be the same. We assume it would be the same because I think we were pretty thorough, but it could be different. So they're based on our professional judgments ultimately, but the methods are transparent and they're repeatable. Each fish gets a score from 1 to 5, which is critical to low concern. A fish that was scored 5, there's only the coastal rainbow trout was the closest to that. It was a species we weren't too concerned about. There are lots of populations. A critical species would be one like the coho salmon, which is on the verge of extinction. And here are our basic findings that we got out of the report. First off, most species have declined since 2007. That 10 years of which when our other report was finished. So over 10 years, we've seen a significant decline of these species. Obviously, the drought is a contributing factor to this. And our predictions are that if these present trends continue, the present population trends continue, about three-quarters of these fish will be extirpated by 2100. And that's why this is so alarming, that this report shows a detectable decline in just 10 years. And we think that roughly half of them will be extirpated in 50 years. But I always have to put the reminder in here that this is if present trends continue. If we don't do something about it, this is what will happen. But there's lots we can do, and I think that's what you'll hear today. For our status scores, it just shows you the switch in. I wanted to mention here that we include both anadromous fish like salmon and steelhead and resident trout populations. There are a lot of very interesting resident species in the state. And what you see is that the anadromous forms, the sea run forms, are they're much more likely to be in critical condition than are the inland forms, the resident forms, the trout and so forth. This partly relates to management, but it partly relates to the condition of many of our coastal streams. Also, when you compare these two reports, this is where you see this shift. You'll notice that the species that we regard in critical condition, that is, the ones that are have a trajectory towards extinction at the present time, have shifted, that there are many more species now in that critical condition, 14 species, than there were in our 2007-2008 report when we had 5 species. That partly reflects, I think, better information and better metrics, but I think it's a real shift as well. And the causes of the declines are multiple. Multiple and interacting. I don't want to get into these individually, but each species has its own portfolio of causes. And I'm sure you're all aware of that in this board here, that there are many things that affect water quality and the habitat in streams and lakes and other areas where these fish are inhabit. But each species has a different profile, and each species has its own unique problems. But they also have some more general problems as well. And one of the more general problems here is climate change. We regard about 61% of our species as being, that climate change as being a critical factor, one of the overriding factors that will cause these declines in the long run. And because climate change was so important, I'd done an earlier studies which we used 20 different metrics to evaluate the effects of climate change on all the fishes of California, including the salmonids. So this climate change threat evaluation is especially thorough and is one that I think we all have to take into account. Again, if we can, whatever we do to try to save these fish, we have to counter the effects of climate change. And we hope that some of that has to be done in the streams. Of course, some of it has to be done globally as well. And now we go into some examples that Patrick will talk about.
Thanks, Peter. I'm Pat Samuel from CalTrout. I'd like to dive into a couple of relevant examples that are under this board's jurisdiction. First, I'd like to just state that this board plays a really critical role because nearly two-thirds of California's 31 remaining salmonid species lie either wholly or partially under your jurisdiction. And so one of the ones I wanted to talk about briefly, or I'll give an example of one salmon, one steelhead, and one inland species to give a sense of the different threats that they face, but also the different strategies we can use to help restore them. So Central California coast coho range from Humboldt County down to Santa Cruz County. These fish rely on cold water, colder than Chinook or steelhead for the most part. Some of the threats they face are dams, which restrict access for spawning and rearing. A real legacy impacts on the landscape from logging and agriculture. Estuary alteration, water diversion at key times. These fish, the offspring, need to oversummer and rely on stream flow during the hot and dry summer and fall months, and also climate change. Some of our recommendations to address these threats for Central California coast coho include focusing on habitats with high intrinsic potential. So these places that once supported abundant fish, focusing our efforts there. And we can do this with a couple different tools, conservation hatcheries being one. That's a tool that's currently being used out here on the Russian River with the coho broodstock program. Some places where we can try investing in further habitat restoration work include places like Lagunitas Creek, Walker Creek, the Russian River, the Matole. We recommend working with the vineyards and cannabis cultivators, which rely on that water as well as the fish, to try to reduce diversions during those critical summer and fall months when there's less water remaining in streams for these fish. And then potentially offering special status to our Santa Cruz County coho. That's the southern extent of the range of these fish and the place where they're most likely to blink out first without further action. Next, I'd like to talk about a unique life history of steelhead, the summer run steelhead of Northern California. These fish range from Humboldt County to Mendocino County, and they too face threats from dams, agriculture, alteration of their estuaries in these coastal systems, and climate change. These are fish that enter fresh water in the spring and summer months, and they oversummer in fresh water. And so they rely on cold, clean water and pool habitat in order to basically wait out the hot summer months until stream flows allow them upstream migration to their spawning grounds. So this unique life history requires unique approaches. So we recommend prioritizing specific actions like reducing diversions during summer and fall months when we can, when there's less water in these streams, where we know they're oversummering. Focusing on the Eel River, which was historically the most productive system for this life history, and reducing interactions between hatchery and wild fish through a variety of methods. And finally, I want to talk about one example of an inland trout species, McLeod River rainbow trout. Inland species generally face slightly different set of threats than our anadromous fish, and that's because of the habitats they occupy. McLeod River rainbow trout inhabit only four small streams near Mount Shasta, tributary to the McLeod River. The major threats this species face are non-native species, mostly non-native trout that have been stocked historically, things like long-term drought and fire, which are related to climate change, as we know, and also small population sizes. And oftentimes, these fish are residing in less than a mile of stream, and there's just a few hundred individuals. And so things like a single catastrophic fire, like we saw here in the last few months, could potentially wipe out an entire population. And so the approaches to restore these fish are slightly different, as you'd expect. One thing we can do is develop genetic management plans that increase genetic diversity of these fish. If we know they reside in a single basin, we can establish refuge populations outside of their home basin so that in the event of a catastrophic fire or volcanic eruption or some kind of event, a reserve population can exist. We can enhance existing habitats, and also we can engage in regular population monitoring. And just briefly, I wanted to mention this is actually one of our bounce-back candidate species. Because of the heroic efforts of Department of Fish and Wildlife staff and others, McLeod River rainbow trout were actually pulled into the hatchery in Mount Shasta in 2015 because the streams were drying and we had concerned citizens and others out there noting that, hey, these fish may blink out. It came close. And so as a last resort, they're pulled into a hatchery and just this past year released again back into their native habitat. So there's a success story, and we expect that these fish will bounce back at our next status update whenever we do that. And just quickly here, I wanted to highlight, again, I mentioned almost two-thirds of the 31 salmonids reside either partly or wholly under the in the areas under the jurisdiction of this board. And these are some of the most critically imperiled species. And the ones that are under this board's jurisdiction are here highlighted in yellow. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Rob Lusardi.
Okay, hi. So I want to start off just with a photograph here of a fossil. This is, does anyone know what this is? This is Eosalmo driftwoodensis. It's the oldest known fossil of a salmonid. It's about 50 million years old, which is pretty neat. These fish have been around for at least 50 million years. And I'm going to talk about big kind of overarching recovery strategies that I think that we think are important in California. And to start with that, really, you just have to look at the history of these fish to understand how we can improve their status. So Eosalmo, or really any, historically before people dominated the landscape, would deal with certainly volcanic eruptions, mega droughts lasting for decades, if not longer, multiple decades, landslides, disconnections of habitat, and glaciation events as well, right? So very difficult periods. And the reason they were able to persist is because they were genetically diverse. And the reason they were genetically diverse is because they could take advantage of lots of different habitats throughout the landscape. So if you imagine each one of these yellow dots would be an independent population, each of those populations experiences different environmental conditions, and those environmental conditions contribute to the diversity within different populations. So some during a volcanic eruption or a drought, you might have some actually die off. But because you have these diverse populations and because they are very good at colonizing and recolonizing habitat, they could overcome landslides, glaciation events, et cetera, and reestablish themselves throughout the landscape. Today, the story is a little different because of land use throughout the state and just humans in California. And so when you think about changes in habitat, of course, the Central Valley historically or has lost about 95% of the wetlands and the floodplain habitat due to levying. And so we have very homogeneous types of habitat. We have invasive introduced species like striped bass and brook trout, which compete and also are predators on native salmonids. We have production hatcheries, with something like Central Valley Fall Run Chinook, has had a pretty big effect on wild populations. That might be an understatement. And high head dams, of course, as well, basically blocking access to historical habitat to those areas that really produce the genetic diversity that's really important.